expertise at song leading fits right into what I want to talk about tonight. I'm going to begin by reading a few verses from two different psalms, Psalms 98 and Psalms 100. The first four verses of Psalms 98 first. O sing unto the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm hath gotten him the victory. The Lord hath made known his salvation, his righteousness hath he openly showed in the sight of the heathen. He hath remembered his mercy and his truth toward the house of Israel, and all the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our Lord. Make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all the earth. Make a loud noise and rejoice and sing praise. Psalms 100. Make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all ye lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. Know you that the Lord, he is God. It is he that hath made us, and not we ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise, and be thankful unto him and bless his name. For the Lord is good, his mercy is everlasting, and his truth endureth to all generations. What I want to talk to you tonight about is music. But not maybe in the same way that we often do. Because usually in our assemblies, when we're talking about music, we often are defending our a cappella approach and defending our not using instrumental music. And I am an advocate of that. I agree with that, and I think that teaching is appropriate. But sometimes we'll take verses that we use in particularly helpful ways in making a point and then lose some of what is in those verses. For instance, if I were to ask you for a verse to substantiate baptism, you would probably go first to Acts 2:38, which is a good verse about baptism being an essential part of our salvation. But there are other wonderful points in Acts 2:38 other than baptism. There's repentance. There's the gift of the Holy Spirit. We could spend a whole week talking about Acts 2:38 and never mention baptism and still not do much more than scratch the surface. Well, a similar approach I think we find in passages such as Colossians chapter 3. And Colossians chapter 3, verse 16 says, Let the word of God dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, making grace in your hearts to the Lord. And again, we often would take that passage and the one that's found in Ephesians chapter 5, where it says, make a melody in our hearts, as an indication of our music needs to be within our heart and not from an instrument. And I agree with that. But there's so much more in that verse other than a justification for our a cappella approach to singing. There is a wonderful admonition about singing and praise. Songs and music have graced the world since the beginning of time, and they have graced the Lord's world from before the beginning of time. And I find and I think that music reaches into the hearts of people in ways that maybe very few, if any other things, can. And that maybe is undoubtedly why God placed music as a central part of our worship. Because music deeply connects us. In this case, music deeply connects us with our Creator. Nothing helps us make it through some of the days that we have to go through like music and a song. My mother is 90, and she's a hummer. And by that I mean she hums. She's lived near us for 4 years. The first year or two, I would pick her up, and she would get in the car, and she'd start humming. And I would think, this is going to be a long trip. So I'd turn the radio up. Didn't faze her. She just kept on humming. So I turned the radio up a little more. I don't know if she kept humming or not, because I couldn't hear anything after that. But it struck me, the time will come when I will long to hear her hum and won't be able to. In my car, I can do a magnificent concerto if I'm alone. And maybe you can too. Where would we be without music? You know, when Adam and Eve sinned, God placed some curses upon mankind and the land. I'm awfully thankful that one of those curses wasn't taking music away from us. He could have. He could have said, okay, I don't want to have any more of that singing. No more humming. But he didn't. He did punish mankind in multiplicity of ways, but he left music intact. It's a lovely mixture of words, of rhyme, of melody and harmony that can have a soothing effect that few other things can do in the same way. It calms our souls. It lifts our hearts. Johann Goethe, a German theologian, once said, and I quote, "One ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if possible, speak a few reasonable words." Now, I don't know how many of those four things you get done every day. I would say maybe I get two of those four. I don't read a good poem every day. I don't even read a bad poem every day. I don't know if I'd know a fine picture if I saw one. I know what I like, but that doesn't usually agree with the critics. But I doubt a day goes by that I don't hum a song or think of a song. And I imagine that you are much the same. It seems to tie in for me with Philippians 4:8, where it talks about whatsoever things are good and virtuous and pure. Now, not all music is good, virtuous, and pure, but a lot of it is. Do we sing enough? Maybe I should say, do we sing enough good songs? Not necessarily those songs that we grew up with in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, and I don't know, you know, whenever you grew up. There were some good songs in those eras, but there were some really stupid songs in those eras. But we remember them. Most of the commercials I see on TV, I couldn't tell you what they're selling, but I often remember the catchy little tune. And so do you. All the miles that we drive, do we sing? Or do we rely on the electric box to take care of that for us? And then there's nothing inherently wrong with the electric box. But I've made numerous long, you know, 7, 8, 9 hour trips with just one tape in the, well, CD now, in the car thing. And I sing along all the way to Indiana or Colorado, and you do the same. Music just has a fascination for us. My grandpa Lee used to never sing at church. And I forgot to bring this up. I'll bring it up because I want to quote. One day they were singing a song, song number 2, or Marching to Zion, and in verse number 2 it says, that those refuse to sing who never knew our God. Now those aren't inspired words, so I'm not saying we should take our cue from the lyrics of a song, but that dawned on Grandpa, and he sang the rest of his life. Not terribly good. But he sat on the front row, so he didn't bother anybody. But I have run into people that don't sing. That's a I don't know if I'm going to call that a sin, but it's sure a big missed opportunity. There's a man in our home congregation that disliked singing so much that when he was in grade school, he would drink milk of magnesia to make his tongue coated so they'd send him to the nurse rather than have to go to music class. I'd rather sing all day than drink milk of magnesia. It's just hard for me to grasp that, but not everybody has the same affinity for it. And I'm not talking about being good at music. I'm not talking about being a good musician or a good singer. Some are, some aren't. Most of us are in the middle. We aren't as good as we sound in our heads. But that's irrelevant. Music has such an impact on us, and I think the Lord understood that. It has an impact on our health. At the proper times and in the proper way, good music can lower your blood pressure. It affects our mood. There's a lot of documented evidence, pardon me, that exposure to music is beneficial to both the mind and the body. Scientists have found it can decrease our heart rate, our blood pressure, our muscle tension, our motor responses. It can lower our peripheral skin temperature. It can improve our gastric activity, our biochemical responses. They found that music involvement in children before the age of 12 improves their spatial intelligence and math skills. Music has creative, structural, and emotive qualities, stimulates interaction, self-awareness, learning, self-expression, communication, personal development. And in worship, it undoubtedly enables the worshiper to better encounter the living God, bringing a sense of majesty, wonder, mystery, and delight. I don't think it's any accident that the Lord gave us music, and I don't think it's any accident that He asked music to be a central part of our worship service. I don't want to rate aspects of our worship service in terms of what's most important or less, but I do feel that probably the song service has more to do with setting the mood and the tone of our worship than anything else when we assemble. Music helps our memory. If I were to ask you, and some of you could do this, maybe most of you, to name the 12 sons of Jacob, I know that several of you could do that, but I'm almost certain that if you did it, you would hum the little song that you used to learn them. If I were to ask you to write down the words to the national anthem, most of you could do it, but I don't imagine very many of us could do it without humming it in our head. People like to hear birds chirping in the morning. Psychologists tell us that the reason for that is, in more primitive times when men and women woke up, if they heard the birds chirping, they knew there was no predator around, because birds don't chirp when there's a predator around. So it connotated security. We have walls that tend to protect us. But we still like to hear the chirping of birds. Mothers sing to their babies long before the babies ask them to. But it often has a soothing effect both on the mother and on the child. It's just amazing when we stop and think what music has done for us. In 1929, this was just prior to the Great Depression, a song came out, and I don't know if its popularity was because of the Depression, but I do wonder about it. It was a song written by Vincent Yeoman, wrote the music, and Billy Rose wrote the lyrics. It's been recorded over and over and over by Perry Como, Neil Sedaka, Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Nelson Eddy, and it's simply entitled Without a Song. And the first verse goes like this: without a song, the day would never end. Without a song, the road would never bend. When things go wrong, a man ain't got a friend without a song. And I have wondered if the popularity of that song coincided with the Depression, the crash. That song came out just about the time those things hit, and people need it uplifted. They need comforted. Maybe it would have been a popular song had there not been a depression, but I think some of its popularity is probably due to that. We are simply bathed in music. And when a song picks us up, it picks us up from a pit. We have songs and music in stores, in elevators, in movies, commercials. You ever watch a movie without any music? Changes the whole movie. It's that music that tells me something bad is about to happen or something good has just happened. I don't have to be paying much attention to what's going on when I hear the ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. I know it's time to close my eyes and let it happen. It just affects us. Well, if it affects us in our daily life, think how it can affect us and maybe should affect us in our spiritual life. We have songs for all of our major occasions. We have wedding songs. We have funeral songs. We have war songs. And there's a reason for that. They set the mood. They set the tone. But of all of that, of utmost importance, has to be our songs of worship. And there are many. And we all have our preferences in terms of songs of worship. Sometimes it takes me a while to warm up to a new song. But often I do warm up to it. But the old songs that I kind of like, somebody had to warm up to them 70 years ago. That's okay as long as they're spiritual. But can you imagine worship without song? I don't think we intend to do this, but sometimes I get the feeling songs are the prelude to our worship. They're the way that we can ease in a little late or maybe finally get our last conversation out of the way before something important happens. We miss the point when that happens. Those songs are so much to be a part of our worship. They had songs in heaven before the earth was ever created. In Job chapter 38, verse 4, it talks about the angels singing in heaven as they watched the creation unfold. In Genesis chapter 4, verse 21, there's a list in the latter part of Genesis 4 of Cain's descendants. And we know that Cain obviously did a grievous sin in killing his brother, but many of Cain's descendants were very prominent in the expansion of the civilization, in metalworking. And in verse 21 of Genesis chapter 4, we find a man by the name of Jubal, who is the father of music. Do you realize that the longest book in the Bible is a song book? We call it Psalms, but that's what it is. In the translation from the Hebrew to the English or to any other language, we lose the rhythm, we lose the rhyme, and we've lost the melody that goes with it. But Psalms is just one long song book. Longest book, biggest book that God included in what we call the Bible is a song book. In Exodus chapter 15, verse 19 and following, as the children of Israel were coming out of Israel, they sang a song to the Lord for deliverance. Poetic words, and undoubtedly far more poetic in the Hebrew than in the English. In Judges chapter 5, we have those two co-judges, Deborah and Barak, singing a duet as they go about their tasks. In 1 Samuel chapter 16, at one of David's three anointings, there was a soothing of song that accompanied that anointing. A little later in that book, in chapter 18, verse 6, we find Saul angered because the people were singing a song that extolled David and kind of put Saul down. It evoked emotions. David the king was probably the king of songs. Many of the psalms, he wrote about half of the psalms, were songs. He was a musician, player of the harp. And he passed it along to his son. Because we're told that Solomon wrote thousands of songs. There was an entire group of the Hebrews that were to keep the songs and the musicians as it related to the temple. But there's an interesting passage in Psalms 137 that seems to imply that when Israel went into Babylonian captivity, for some reason the songs kind of ebbed or ended. I'm not sure why that happened, because I would have thought of all times when they needed to have a melody in their heart, it would have been while they were in captivity. Maybe it had to do with the Babylonians mocking their songs about Zion and about God. I don't know for sure. But when we get to the New Testament, songs certainly have returned. In Luke chapter 2, verses 10 and following, Mary's song relating to the birth of the Messiah. Matthew chapter 26, verse 26 and following, we have songs at the end of Jesus' life. They followed him to the cross. It says, as the Jesus and the disciples were in the garden, they went after singing a hymn. I don't know what hymn they sang. I'm sure they didn't have a hymn book, but they were singing. Maybe these 12, 13 men. I don't know whether they sang well or not. It doesn't matter. They sang well as it relates to God. No songbooks, no hymnals, no pitch pipes, but they had music and they had song. In the Bible, we find songs for joy, songs for distress. Acts 16, verse 25. This has Paul and Silas in the prison or jail at Philippi. The earthquake, you remember that story. You know what Paul and Silas were doing. They weren't preaching. They weren't ranting or raving. They were singing. And the impact that must have undoubtedly had on them, but the impact it had on all of those around was undoubtedly a crucial part of the jailer's conversion. Yes, he was converted because they didn't escape, but on top of that, they were singing. They were joyous. William Stafford, and I believe he's the one that wrote the song in our songbook, 61, I should have checked it. But it's one we sing a lot, and he wrote that song after his four children had been killed in a sea mishap between America and England. His wife had to write him that their children had been lost. And he was obviously both a poet and a musician in order to put the lyrics and melody to that song. But someone once asked him, "Mr. Stafford, when did you decide to become a poet?" I found his answer intriguing. He said, "We are all born poets. I just kept doing it." He said, "The real question is, why did so many other people quit?" Now, I don't know that we are literary scholars. And I don't know the answer to this question, but I have an opinion. If I were to say, "Have you ever written a poem?" I bet almost everybody here would have to say yes. Some of us wouldn't want to admit it, and a lot of us wouldn't want them read, but most of us have wrote a poem. It's not that hard to do, and it's terribly, terribly inspiring. When I first started doing church work full time, I had trouble sometimes finding what I thought were point-making quotes or whatever. So I just started writing poems. And in each sermon, I'd have one of my poems. I didn't tell anybody they were mine. because I didn't know how they were going to go over. I've quit doing that, for I don't know why. Maybe I shouldn't, or maybe I should. Well, I found that fun. I found that invigorating. When I did Mike Warner's father's funeral, Shirley had written a poem. And it was a good poem, really. And she'd written several. I don't want to embarrass her. She just does it. And I know that others have done it too. I think it's good for the soul. I think Johann Guder had something when he said, he didn't say we ought to write a poem, but he said we ought to read a poem. But I think we could. Poetry causes us to put our thoughts down in a concision way and think about them. And that's, I think, a very, very good thing for most of us who get too busy to maybe really meditate like we should. God gave us a voice. He gave us different kinds of voices. But he did it for a reason. Ralph Martin, in his little book on worship in the early church, said the church was born in song. That we are a singing people. And there's a reason for that. The reality of God and Christ, creation and salvation, heaven and hell are simply too great for mere speaking. They deserve a song. The depth and intensity of emotion that can really sometimes only be found in a song. He said, God glorifies himself toward his creatures in two ways. By appearing to them, that's the incarnation, and by communicating himself to their hearts. And that, in large measure, is one of the grand results of music. Therefore, we begin to see why singing is so important to our lives and to our worship. He concluded by saying, God is so great that thinking alone will not suffice. Now, I had never thought of that, because I don't think we think enough. I think we're pretty lazy thinkers in general. But he said, even at that, thinking is alone is not enough. There must also be a deep feeling. Talking alone will not suffice. There is to be song, and there is to be melody. In Colossians chapter 3, verse 12, that I looked over, it talks about the concept of, in verse 16, of letting the word richly come from our hearts. Pick the words of a favorite hymn. I don't know what your favorite hymn is. Maybe you have trouble picking one, but you can pick two or three. I have mentally picked the ones I would like to have sung at my funeral, but I've not told anybody what they are because I don't know for sure that I deserve a funeral. But we have our favorites, and they mean so much. I was at a congregation about a month ago, and the invitation was extended, and we were singing the invitation song, and a lady, maybe about the second row, very stoic lady, a grand lady, a deeply spiritual lady. I don't know how to describe her any better than that. But not one given to profuse showing of emotion. We got about halfway through the first verse, and I saw her digging into her purse. And that kind of intrigued me. And out came a Kleenex. And she spent the rest of her song daubing her eyes. And after we had dismissed, I said, her husband, Mike, had died a few months earlier. I said, that must have been one of Mike's favorite songs. And she said, it was. You know, we relate music to certain people. We relate music to certain situations. And I don't think that is not only not wrong, I think it's so natural, and I think it's so healthy, and I think it's so inspiring. In Revelation chapter 5, verse 8, it says we're going to be singing before the Lamb of God in heaven. You might as well start practicing. Now, I think we'll all sound pretty good in heaven, but I think we all sound pretty good to the Lord now, as long as it's from our hearts. And we probably give too much emphasis on quality of the tone rather than the words, but we've flagellated ourselves with that sermon so many times, I won't do it again. But since the beginning, song has been blessed by God. Our challenge, I think, is to remain sensitive to them. We sing these songs with such rapidity, and that's good, but we sing them almost to the point we can do it without thinking, and that's not good. It's like driving. There are places I can drive without thinking. I get there and I don't remember driving there, but I got there. When I was in college, I was so used to driving to campus at Indiana University that I got up one Sunday morning, went to school. I had to hustle to get back. I held that secret for about 20 years. But you just do things out of habit, but we dare not allow our spiritual singing to do that. But it does require thought. Maybe we need to broaden our stage a little bit. I don't know that that necessarily means learning new songs, although I think there is an appropriateness of that because songs do change. But we certainly need songs with depth. Not what is sometimes called those 7-11 songs. A 7-11 of songs are 7 words and you say them 11 times over and over and over and you call it music. Well, there are times when repetition is okay, but when I was growing up, and a lot of you grew up in the era I were, there were just some really shallow lyrics, terribly shallow. Now I don't know if they're shallow or not because I can't understand them. So, but somebody can understand them. I'm just showing my age. But God does love songs, doesn't he? Maybe it's a hard task that awaits us and that a song will get us through. I think my mom is one of the happiest ladies I know. At times, I also think she's one of the most oblivious ladies I know, but those two often go hand in hand. I have the privilege of being in a lot of homes. I've been in a lot of your homes. It is absolutely wonderful to hear a woman in the kitchen singing. Because that means two things. It means she's happy and it's going to be a good meal. And I'm happy for both of those. We sing when we're happy. Maybe we need to help ourselves and help our young people the songs of faith and how important they are. And we have such a wonderful group of young people at this present moment within the brotherhood that it makes me probably a natural born pessimist, even a tad optimistic about the future. It really does. But let us not mess them up. Maybe we need to pray, help us to mold the songs that we do sing. Maybe we need to sing with honesty and discernment. Are there songs in our book that we shouldn't sing? Well, there are probably a few phrases in there that I could take doctrinal exception to, but that's really not where I'm coming from. I'll tell you a song that I have sung it, but I wonder if I should sing it. We sometimes sing, "I Surrender All." Now, can I really sing that? I'd like to say I'd surrender all, but there are days when which one of us doesn't pull back a tad? Maybe we should sing, "I Should Surrender All," or "I Want to Surrender All." But maybe just think about some of those. One of the songs that I told you I used to think I'd want at my funeral has a phrase in it, "Not a mite would I withhold." Now, can I really sing that? Hardly a comfort can afford. There was a time when that was an appropriate song. For most of us, that's a stretch. Now, am I saying it's sinful to sing those songs? No, I'm not. I'm just saying songs have different places in time. They're not always, just because it was appropriate for my grandparents, it doesn't mean it was appropriate for me. I need to give thought to it. I need to give discernment to it. But there is nothing like that right combination of words and melody that seldom fail to work their magic. The magic of a song. And given the pressures and demands that we face in our everyday life, we could use a little magic at times. The homemaker with children at her feet who faces 14 plus hours of endless chores. The professional who deals with the grind of people, people, people. The truck driver who heads into the grind of traffic and monotonous miles. The artist or the musician that requires hours of practice. The student, the teacher who face the cyclical grind of daily preparations, assignments, exams, and papers. Yeah, they could use a little magic, couldn't they? No matter who you or who I am, what you or what I do, the grind can be there. The salesperson has their quotas. The business person has the P&L line. The performer has his rehearsals. The preacher has the sermons and the class preparation. The government and military people have red tape and corporate dealings. Without a song, the day would never end. Without a song, the road will never bend. Without a song, a man ain't got a friend. Without a song. The answer for many times is a song. I'm not talking about us being great musicians. I don't even care if we carry a tune. It's the heart and the melody. All of us are good singers when we're by ourselves. Timeless songs, not silly ditties, but strong melodies with messages designed to help us live. The man who baptized me, he's no longer with us, the man who baptized me wrote one of the songs in our Red Songbook. It's not my favorite song, other than it's my favorite song because he wrote it. And he meant so much to me. Those age-old melodies that drift with glory that allows us to live beyond the grind. Songs of victory, songs of affirmation, songs of encouragement, songs of confidence, songs of strength, hope, compassion. Without the Lord's songs in our hearts, our long days will never end. And those wearisome roads may never bend. Now, the gift of music does bring with it some dangers and some responsibilities. We live dangerously with music that simply moves and caters to the ecstasy of the present, but does not give time for thoughtful reflection about the future. I'm mystified by a generation that can sing the same stanza 12 times with meaningless content, but can't sing four verses of a meaningful hymn to the Lord. A generation that can feel the emotion of music, but not the teaching of music. That's not what I'm wanting us to do. We can feel the emotion with the teaching of music. Music, I believe, should come into our souls to also build a reservoir of comfort to be tapped in the moments when we're having a difficult time. To come back to a lightening of our load. Maybe you can share this experience, but one of my fondest memories growing up when I was, in that 7 to 11 age group was sitting in the back seat, and my mom and dad would be in the front seat, and they'd be singing some song from the Blackwood Brothers or the Stamps Quartet. And they were pretty good, at least I thought they were. And I'd be back here doing my thing, and I'm sure I wasn't very good. But I still remember it, and I learned a lot from it. We used to have the old, 33 and a third of the quartets that are now, they're all now dead. And I really enjoyed those. Now, do you have to listen to that to be saved? No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just talking about a resource that is so valuable to us. Now, I admit, it takes me a while to warm up to some things. You know, are they purple songbooks? At Tea Hill, it took me a while to get into those purple songbooks, but there's some good stuff in there. Now, there's some that I'm still working on, but I'll get there if I live long enough. Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, I don't want to belabor the point, but as I said, my purpose tonight is not to defend a cappella singing, although I believe in it, but I think you must too, or you wouldn't be here. But it's not to lose sight of the bigger picture of how important music is for us in our corporate worship, in our private worship. You know, Paul tells us to pray without ceasing. Well, maybe we could also sing without ceasing. And I find that even easier, because those melodies help me so much with the words and with the meaning. Johann Guter said, "Every day, let us sing a little song, read a good poem, view a fine picture, and if possible, speak a few reasonable words." I don't know that he really expected us to do all four of those every day, but I think what he was really saying to us is slow down and fill your life with things that will have a inspirational meaning to you in your Christian walk. You know, sometimes it's just like we're trying to drink out of a fire hydrant. The water, the life just comes at us so fast. You ever tried to drink out of a fire hydrant or a hose on high? I get more on me than in me. No, I turn it down so it's a nice, steady stream, and then I get a good drink. Sometimes we just need to turn life down a little bit and take a good swallow, a deep drink. We don't want to be slothful. We don't want to be lazy, but we don't want to be so busy with things that have no eternal significance that we miss out on those things that could really enrich our souls. Blessed are those who do hunger and thirst after righteousness. When I've got a good meal in front of me, I like to go slow and make it last. I need to turn the hose down. Without a song, I thoroughly enjoy music. Not because I am overly blessed in that area. I am socially acceptable in that area. That's how I'd classify myself. I can get through a song without great embarrassment, but you're not going to get me to sing a solo in front of people. I will talk to 1,000 people, but I won't sing to 2. That's just the way I am. Maybe that's the way you are. But man, I can sing in my car by myself. Trust me, I'm good. But you'll never know how good I am. No, I'm being obviously tongue-in-cheek when I say that. But it just makes the day so much brighter. So much richer, so much deeper. People who don't sing, I'm not saying they're not going to be saved. I don't know that. I just know they're missing out. They're missing out. And I'm so thankful that God has given us song and given us music. And he did it for a purpose. We're going to close our thoughts. A little different approach to singing and making melody in our hearts. I did that on purpose because I really haven't had too many people talk about it this way. Maybe I've just missed it. And those verses are important in our defense of the way we do it, but don't lose sight of that underlying thought of how important music is to a vibrant spiritual life. By itself, it's not enough, but it's a tremendous aid and a tremendous help. I often enjoy getting in some a car with somebody and whatever's on their radio tells me a lot about them. Farm Report, Southern Gospel, Chicago, Beach Boy, it just tells you a lot. And I like all of those except the Farm Report. I'm not on to that too much, but I like the other three. And we can have that balance. But what a wonderful part it can be to the encouragement we need in our spiritual walk. If anybody's here that we can help in any way, the Lord has a wonderful melody for each of our hearts. Maybe it's the song Jesus Saves. That seems to fit. Maybe that's the song that the Lord wants us to sing. Jesus Saves, Jesus Saves. I don't know. There's so many good ones. But take a melody with you this week and see if it doesn't help you get through the week at a level that the Lord really wants us to reach. If we can help anybody in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and as we sing.